All right, everybody, welcome in. It is the Stick and Hack Show, and this is Adam Grubb, the Hack. Mike Ryan, the Stick, is taking some well-deserved time off, so we decided this time to do the best of 2020. Really, the only bright spot of the year was the Stick and Hack Show. So we are excited to bring this to you. This is the best of moments, from interviews to segments and contests, and of course, me looking stupid at Mike with a look of disappointment and disdain on his face majority of the year. We are excited to bring you the best of the Stick and Hack Show. Enjoy and Merry Christmas from Stick and Hack. All right, first up, 2020 questions. Now, this is questions about 2020, maybe. I actually don't remember this at all, so this maybe we'll listen to this together. As you know, this year was unexpected and different, so that's what this is, unexpected and different. Here we go, number 10, best of Stick and Hack. Moving into the clubhouse, 2020 questions. So yep. this Mike, is really in this year for Stick and Hack. These are not just for us, but just in the world of golf. I want your opinions on what happens.
Yep.
Okay. Does Rory win? Oh, this is a game called 2020 questions.
Okay.
Get it?
Yep.
20 questions.
Yeah.
2020.
Yeah.
But we don't have 20 because we don't have time. So we did six. So the game doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't, but it's fine. That's what
it's
we
fine.
Do.
It's what,
none happens. Of what we do makes sense, especially that interview we just did.
That's what happens.
I have no idea how we pulled that off, but it's incredible. It was
honest,
awesome.
He was unbelievable.
It was
good. I could just sit and drink and listen to him talk.
I'm hoping we get that chance someday. It'd be awesome.
Well, I should have asked him to play golf.
Ugh. You never think of these things.
I it's don't. I'm so fact. Stupid. Well, all right. Hey. 2020. What, producer Shane, what do you need? Oh, he's still on the phone. Jim, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm enjoying your commentary.
Can we come down and play golf with you?
You can anytime. I'll take you where Sam Snead won 7 of his 8 Greensboro Opens, or I'll take you to Pinehurst, which is an hour below here.
Perfect.
Yeah, come on.
Thank you, sir.
I'll introduce you to the Irish Antichrist.
It's getting better.
Yes.
It's getting better. And we'll pay for it, okay? How's that sound?
Yeah. No.
Good. It's really getting
even
better.
Yes.
All right, 2020 questions. Does Rory win the Masters, Mike?
No.
All right. Does Phil get a top 5 finish before the U.S. Open?
Doubtful.
Okay. Will the Ryder Cup team have Tiger on it?
Absolutely.
All right. Do we sell out the members' meeting? You don't have as much confidence.
I hope so.
Do I beat my best score of 79 this year?
I think you do.
Hey!
I do.
Wow.
I think you will.
Thanks, bud.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Do you give me any other tips this year besides fire the hips, which makes no sense to me? Do you give me any other tips to help my game?
Nope.
Okay. Shock of the year. Really. Honest to God.
Is it?
Shocking. No, it's not.
I've stopped giving you advice because you don't listen to me, so...
I listen. It doesn't make any sense. Fire the hips. I'm turning my body.
Hey, I can't.
What else do you want?
I can't
from
help
me?
You then.
And as you know, most of this year we've had to have social distancing, and some of you have been social distancing for a majority of your lives. So this was no different. Yet this year made things very different. But it helped the golf game. But how do we social distance in golf? This is Stick and Hack highlight number 9. So possibility 2 weeks in the PGA Tour. No rakes in the sand traps. Golfers are going to have to pull their own clubs to limit contact with caddies, which I can't even imagine what that's like. And players are forced to putt with the flag stick in.
Yep.
Now, this doesn't, first of all, let's just back up. Does any of that sound outlandish to you?
To me, no. I think those are all very reasonable ideas, and they are, you know, they obviously are going to have to do something like that to mitigate the spread of any disease, any of that type of thing. It is what it is.
It's not a problem.
No.
The basic is it's not a problem.
No.
One pro, 32-year-old Adam Hadwin,
yep,
thinks it's a problem. So last month, the end of April, he said that this could be a deal breaker for him. Now, Adam Hadwin sounds like my accountant's name. You know, honest to God, I did not know he was a golfer. And I'm not trying to be offensive or trying to be funny. I did not know who he was until this moment. So he's 32 years old, Adam Hadwin. And this is what he said in an interview. He said, "Are we not going to be allowed to touch pins or flags? I putt with the flag out. So if we all of a sudden are going to be forced to putt with it in to not touch a flag, I'm going to have issues with that. And that might make me honestly rethink playing because it changes everything. Adam Hadwin has had enough. He is putting his foot down and he is saying, hell no, not on my watch.
Yeah, I think it is. I read the article and my immediate reaction was get over it. You'll be fine. It's not that big a deal. I think one of the quotes he made was, you know, I don't think guys are going to put their livelihood in jeopardy by having to putt with the stick in, which to me is like the most out of touch statement I've ever heard in my life.
That's the most out of touch statement typically at any point in the world in time. But specifically now with everybody who really are fighting for their livelihoods in the front lines of this pandemic. And Adam Hadwin is frustrated because he's going to have to putt with the flag in.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. There were some other items in there they discussed in that interview around possibly, you know, caddies. When you're talking about them not pulling the clubs, they talked about just not having caddies at all. And I think they acted like that was that's just what, like, carry our own bags, like
absolutely not.
Yeah, absolutely not. It's just like, come on, man.
Hey, but to be fair, you think Tiger doesn't play very much now? Wait until those rules come out.
Hey, man, I personally, I think it would be incredible.
Oh, I do too.
Pros carry their bag, have a carry bag out there, and have to club themselves, have to do a little math once in a while. I mean, I think that would be fantastic.
I think it would be what we typically have on our weekend with golf. This is what we would have on TV. Nobody watching.
Yeah.
Guys carrying their own bags, schlepping up their own bags. No galleries, no ropes.
Yep.
Dudes playing golf. One of our favorite guests this year were the boys from Leith Distillery in Edinburgh, Scotland. And they are number 8 on our list of the best of Stick and Hack. One of the greatest places in the world to visit. Tourists there, they flock by the millions throughout the year. It is an incredible piece of land and property that you guys have now on the Port of Leith. Tell us a little bit about what you're building, what you're creating, and what you're bringing to the world when it comes to whiskey, gin, spirits, and an experience over in Scotland.
So what we're doing is we've built a small piece of land down in the docks with Leith, right next to where the old bonded warehouses and all the old whiskey heritage used to be. And we're building something completely different. We're building a brand new building that's going to be 9 stories tall. It's going to be the first vertical distillery in Scotland. And it's going to bring a whole new scientific angle towards manufacturing whiskey.
Yeah. I mean, Edinburgh, you know, Scotland's capital city, and, you know, people think of Scotland golf and whiskey and so much history and heritage there. What we're doing is returning an industry that used to be in Scotland's capital city. It dominated the place, and for two guys who grew up there, it's an incredibly exciting thing for us to be doing. So, we, you know, this started as two whiskey fans sat on a sofa just sipping whiskey and going, wouldn't it be great to make this stuff? And then it got a bit out of control because we sort of had a wee go at making it in our back garden as well and learned a lot from that. And now here we are 7 years later, just started construction on one of the most exciting buildings to be built in our city in quite a long time.
So when you talk about the first, I mean, this is one of the first distilleries of its kind in Scotland, but it's the birthplace of whiskey for most people. There are distilleries over there. There are some great brands and some great companies that have done this. Why you guys? What is different and unique? And of all the things, now it's kind of like Mike and I, you know, with Stick and Hack. I mean, we're starting this golf brand. There's a lot of golf brands out there. Why did we do it? Well, it was built kind of the similar way that you guys were drinking. We said we should do this, and then 48 hours later, we were doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
And your story kind of fits the same as ours. Where did it go from, hey, this is a funny conversation we're having, sipping whiskey and drinking, now we can make this, to, oh, my God, Now are business owners, and we're actually going to be building a distillery.
Absolutely. Well, I guess it starts off, I mean, you know, growing up in Scotland, you're surrounded by whiskey the whole time, and it's just part of the culture and heritage. And we love that. You know, we grew up with that, and we love the history and culture behind so many of the great brands that you see over here. You've got Macallan on the back bar there, things like that. But then at the same time, you know, we're kind of a new generation. We've been growing up watching, like, your amazing distilling revolution going over here in America, and we thought we want to bring a bit of that dynamism over here to Scotland as well, because, like, so much of the recipes of current, you know, whiskies, they are based on so much tradition and heritage, and actually there are so many more things you could be doing within that, you know, if your grains, how you distill it, your fermentation. We've got a real focus on fermentation, and because whiskey is distilled beer. You make a beer and then you distill it, and so we're really focused on that beer bit and trying to do something really new and exciting with a really old drink, if you like.
Awesome.
So that's Ian. Patty, is it different for you, or are you the same? Did you just decide, hey, let's just do this? And
were you like me? And he said, we're doing this. I said, okay.
Yeah, I came home one day and found that Ian had bought a still from Portugal online. And he was trying to work out how to get it through customs without alerting HMRC.
That's fantastic.
How'd that go?
Yeah, it literally it was like, hey, does this thing get in through the port okay? And the guy in Portugal was like, yeah, we just label it machine parts and hopefully no one opens the box.
It's all fine.
Hey, yeah. That guy sounds like a winning strategy.
The guy was fired 12 hours later.
Yeah. But it worked.
You
know, here we are.
You guys had your idea 48 hours later. You were doing it with Scotch whiskey. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. You know, we have to, you make your whiskey and you've got to sit on it for years and years. You know, 3 years before you can call it Scotch whiskey and many more years before you can sell it. So, It's been a really long journey for us. And actually, a big part of it was finding where else could we get money in the meantime, because we can't sell anything for years and years. So the idea for us, as you say, Edinburgh, we get millions of visitors. And if we put the distillery at the right place, then loads of people can come and see us. So we've got a great site just down in the harbour in Edinburgh. And it's where we're right next to the Royal Yacht Britannia. So any of these people out there who like to watch The Crown, you see that a lot in The Crown. That's the ship that the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh used to sail around the world in. And it's right next to our distillery now. It's a big, big visitor attraction in Edinburgh. So that's another part of what we're doing, just creating an awesome visitor experience for people to come and see and experience whiskey. And making a bit of gin, too. Yeah. So this all took so long. We even had time to set up a gin distillery and start distributing gin. So, yeah.
Gin's got a bit of a comeback right now, too. And it's huge, right?
Gin in the UK is going absolutely bonkers. There must be 100 new gin distilleries in the last 5 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You can't throw a brick in a cheap industrial estate without hitting a gin distillery.
Yeah.
And then it bouncing off that and hitting another one.
Yeah.
And then hopefully never hitting yours.
No, absolutely not.
Over here, all we get is what?
We have the Crest
Sapphire. We get Hendrix. I think that's about it.
Well, you're just about to get Linden Lime.
Wait.
I can tell you
that. Baby.
I can't wait. I need a little gin flavor in my life.
There's no more difficult thing in the world for most people than to stay mentally tough through an entire round of golf. We talk about that very topic, how to stay mentally tough in golf. This is a Stick and Hack highlight, number 7. And tell me about the hinge. I see that in the back there, and I know you've written a couple things about the hinge, specifically for, I think, football. What is your athletic background, and how did you come to find this career?
So my athletic background was, I mean, I played baseball and soccer. That's what I always enjoyed. I didn't really start playing golf until college. And when I got to college, though, I was a little D2 school in West Virginia. And I discovered this thing called partying, probably my senior year, junior year, sophomore year in high school. And if it was a class, I mean, I would have got an A+ in that. So when I got to college, though, I was like, man, I got partying and baseball and no responsibility, like what could possibly go wrong? So when I got to college partying, I actually, you know, I always tell my groups that too, especially the younger ones, like nothing good happens after midnight. And this was after midnight. For some reason, we're partying near this bridge in West Virginia. Near this bridge was this cliff. And I ended up walking off an 80-foot cliff. You know, I didn't jump. I wasn't pushed. I just absolutely had no idea where I was. And, you know, baseball from that point then was completely over. But if it wasn't for that hinge moment, like I wouldn't have taken that psychology class. And I wouldn't have, when I took that first psychology class, it was like a tattoo on my heart. I was like, this is what I want to do. So I knew I always wanted to do something with sports. But when I knew about that, I was like, man, that mental game, because I was always the type of athlete that always thought too much. You know, I could never get outside my own head. And And nobody could ever help me out with that. No one could ever say all the only thing they ever said was, well, once you get going in the game, it'll leave. It never left me. I was always stuck inside my own head. I was behind enemy lines. And that's how I got into that field. And that was the premise of The Hinge is, look, I don't care how bad things are in our life. It, you know, how bleak an outcome is. It takes one shot to turn everything around. One person that we're going to meet or one opportunity to make all the difference in our lives. That's what we're getting ready for. And that's the real importance of mental toughness.
And that has been something that has been studied and looked at, the science of the mental toughness, especially when it comes to golf. There is a big moment where you look at a golfer and their emotions and their control and their visualization, and all athletes really, is long studied. Do you find that part of this, the science of the emotional and the mental game, very exciting? And do you find that it's really what brought you to this study to begin with?
You know, what can be applied in sports can be applied in life, and then vice versa, right? Like what we learn in life can be applied to sports. I mean, you know, I'm obsessive when it comes to this stuff. I mean, it's what I think about first thing in the morning when I go for my run, and it's what I think about after I tuck my kids into bed, man, is, you know, how do we get better and what are the areas in our life we have to get better at? You know, I think we think of mental toughness, like the stigma around it is, well, it's just flipping big tires, like it's some physical exertion, which, you know, that's part of it, but there's not a lot of physical exertion when it comes to golf here. And then the other part is that I think the wrong part about mental toughness is like, I've got to do it on my own. And that's where I think it's the complete opposite. I think when we allow ourselves to be coachable, man, that's a big step towards our mental toughness. Like I always say, I want my athletes to be a little bit stubborn. Like we got to be stubborn, but we got to be coachable at the same time. Then I think that's how we grow and get better at it.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's great.
All right, Best of Stick and Hack continues here. One of the most prolific golf writers and somebody I could listen to for days and days and days, James Dodson, on the Stick and Hack show. And he regaled us with stories of Arnie and Sam and others. He was a joy to listen to. If you've not listened to this whole show, go back and listen to it today. This is Stick and Hack highlight number 6, the best of. James Dodson is a writer who golfs. So, Jim, you know, the first question for me is, are you a writer who plays golf, or are you a golfer who's a writer?
I'd have to say a writer first. My dad was a newspaper guy when I was I mean, my first memory of life, believe it or not, is Biloxi, Mississippi, where he owned a newspaper. He was kind of a journeyman. He'd been at the Dallas paper. He'd been at the Washington Post, where I was born, then went to Dallas, then Biloxi, then Florence, South Carolina, Wilmington, North Carolina, and finally home to Greensboro, where our family went back generations and my father was from. And so he was a writer, and he was an ad guy, and really clever, funny, wonderful, you know, could quote everybody from Rudyard Kipling to Henry Longhurst. And so I knew golf was his love. He wore the passion for the game so lightly. In other words, I don't think I ever saw him get upset on the golf course. He was very philosophical. And part of why, for example, he put me on a par 3 course and said, look, he showed me how to swing a golf club and, you know, watched me, got my hands in the right, like Arnold's father did with him, you know, got my stance right, all the 5 things that you got to do, as Hogan said. And he just turned me loose and he said, go have fun. And actually there was this little par 3 course north of town here that, I'd show up for, and it was at the club where I was on the swim team. So I would swim in the morning. And this is before you could earn any money. You know, I was 10, 11, 12 years old. And I wear that par 3 golf course out. And I got pretty good. And he finally let me, he said, all right, we'll get you to a real golf course. And then I started playing with buddies. So I think, you know, I was a reader first. I mean, I was, because of that lonely childhood through the South, I have an older brother, but we were 2 years apart and we had pretty different tastes. I was reading books at age 4. Not big books. I was reading, you know, Dr. Seuss books, but
that's what Mike reads today. So,
well, he has that look about it. He looks like a man. Yeah. So he's very familiar with Green Eggs and Ham.
It's definitely, you know? It's definitely my favorite. That's in Curious George.
Stick and Hack Show highlight number 5 here of the best of the Stick and Hack program. I think Dave Barber's nickname enjoys a spot on this list? Of course it has.
Yeah.
All right, I can't go any further in this interview without asking you about your old nickname, Minnesota. Now, there's no judgment here, but we got to understand what the nickname Minnesota means. Now, when I hear Minnesota, I think, oh, he's from the Midwest. No, he likes
yeah.
The Vikings. What you like? Cheese? I guess that's Wisconsin.
That's Wisconsin.
It? Yeah, Minnesota. Why the hell do people call you Minnesota?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I was fat. And
all right then.
I'm an adult. And I'm fat. Yeah. So I mean, it's fine.
Hey, when I was a kid, I was fat. So Minnesota Fats, then I take it.
Minnesota Fats. Yeah, this I guess fictional pool player who I think it was in the movie The Hustler.
Right.
Yeah.
My family started calling me Minnesota because they didn't. My dad thought it was insensitive to call me Minnesota fat. So.
You got to really dig for that that compliment there.
Awesome.
So Minnesota, but you're not fat now. You look fantastic.
Yeah, you look very fit.
Yeah, very fit.
Yeah, yeah. I weigh the same as I did in the eighth grade, and I was about 1 foot. Shorter in the eighth grade.
I definitively do not weigh what I weighed in eighth grade at this point.
Right. But most of us don't. Well, yeah. Good for you. Yeah. We're proud of you. One of our favorite spots to do at the end of the show is the in or out. Who is in or out of a foursome for celebrities and people that we know? And we every episode that we do this, we usually bring the guest in. Sometimes it goes very well. Sometimes we agree. Sometimes we disagree. And sometimes it's a disaster. In and out talk show hosts. This is highlight number 4.
I'm out.
75 is out the door. All right, so we now move into in or out. Thomas, do you want to play this game with us?
Yes.
All right. The game here is in or out of our foursome. So it's you, me, and Mike, and then we have to vote if this person's in or out of our foursome. And the
Can I vote one of you guys out?
Ooh, yes. Absolutely.
Well, we get to vote first, Thomas. And we have voted that it's you. So the three of us, and we have a fourth, and we are going to go with the category talk show hosts. Okay, these are talk show hosts, past and present,
specifically American talk show hosts.
Yeah, American talk show hosts.
So let's
yeah. All right, ready? Here we go. In or out? Jimmy Fallon.
Mike. In.
Thomas.
Out.
Out. Agreed. What? He's too goofy for me. By the third hole, it'd be like, okay, Chief, we get it.
Yeah, that's enough.
Yeah, we get it. Conan O'Brien.
Out.
In.
In.
I knew that was what was going to happen there. I knew it.
Conan's great. Conan is, in fact,
annoys me.
Why?
He just does.
If you listen to he's got an incredible podcast. It's right up there with ours. As far as listenership is concerned,
you guys should have him on.
We should have him on. We haven't even thought about that.
He ain't going to come on now.
I'm going to write. No, he is.
He probably will. Yeah, he probably will.
I'm going to write that down.
And then
Conan,
he'll berate me.
All right, David Letterman.
Absolutely in.
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 Fellow Ball State alum.
Yeah. And just Indiana alum or yes. Indiana native.
Yes.
Letterman's one of my heroes.
My hero.
Yeah. Mine too. So was he on the show before Conan?
Yes.
Kelly Clarkson.
Out.
Out.
Oh, guys, that is rude. Very rude. Out.
I don't even have a reason.
All right, fair enough. Jay Leno.
Out.
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 See?
Perfect. Conan on and yeah.
Right. I've never been.
Me either. I'm not a big fan of Leno. Yeah, he'd be wearing denim. He would look out of place on the course.
He'd show up in a weird
in a weird car in denim and go.
That's
hey,
all,
guys,
all he would Thompson. Talk about.
Hey right. guys, you guys ready to play some golf?
He would just talk about old classic cars all the time.
Oh god, like, the worst.
Whatever.
Yeah. Johnny Carson,
in.
No conversation necessary there. It's the greatest.
Duh.
Ellen,
in for me.
Out.
Nah, this is a toss up. I'm gonna say in. I'm gonna let the last 6 months, you know, just kind of escape me.
I like Ellen.
I like Ellen too.
I think Ellen's.
I think she'd be.
The
I think she'd
knees,
be fine,
man.
Right. Well, nah, that's a little aggressive.
No, whatever.
She's fine. Producer Shane, can you have your own talk show, please? Thank you. My God, he's having his own podcast behind the scenes. Nobody's asking him. Stephen Colbert.
In.
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 John Stewart.
In.
In, for sure.
All right. I guess. Larry King. Hello.
Wait.
What?
Oh.
Why you mean you guess?
I don't know.
In.
He's a little, just a little much for me. I like John Stewart of the early Daily Show. Then he became kind of like Bill Maher, just a little too political for me. And okay.
Trevor Noah then?
I love Trevor Noah. Trevor Noah's in.
Sure.
He's not on this list, but apparently you can just make up your own names, Thomas, in the middle of the game.
Yeah.
He's a two-time guest, man. He can do what he wants.
Yeah. Larry King.
Bob Saget.
Oh, my God. Thomas, I'm going to beg you to stop naming people. Bob Saget. So in. Good. I'll say Bob Saget's in.
Yeah. He's not even a talk show host.
No. I didn't think so. Thomas is literally.
Does he have one? No. He might. Well, they're giving everybody talk show hosts.
Thomas is now just naming people that he knows in Hollywood. That's what's happening right
people
now.
People I've seen on TV.
Yeah. Jared Leto. Sure. Why not? What is happening, Thomas? Larry King.
In.
He's out for me.
He's
because he might bring what's the rapper with him? Snoop Dogg.
What? Are they friends?
I don't know what's even happening.
Are they friends?
This will be the last time we have a guest do the game with us. I can tell you that much.
I think Larry King's out for me.
Larry King is out, and Larry King is speaking of 103.
Yeah, is he alive still?
I think he is. He doesn't know it.
Oh, okay.
But he is alive.
I wasn't completely sure if he was still alive. But.
All right, the last one here of in or out talk show hosts of our foursome, Wendy Williams.
I don't even know who that is.
Oh, out.
Thomas knows who it is.
Should I know who that is?
You shouldn't. I mean, I don't know. She has her own talk show.
When's it on?
At 10 a.m., right?
Yeah, that's
right?
why I don't.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why. That's why you don't know. Wendy Williams is out for me. I find her incredibly annoying. Yet she is very popular and has a show that's way more successful than this one. So, I mean, what the hell? So,
well, it's how you measure success.
Well, she's rich and I'm not. All right, the Stick and Hack program continues here as the best of 2020. Sometimes Mike and I, we have some difficulties getting out our thoughts and our questions in a way that isn't offensive. It's not on purpose. It's just how the world works. And Mike and I both stepped in it this past year, with a blind golfer who was on our program. How a blind golfer lines up their shot? Well, this is Stick and Hack highlight number 3.
Jeremy, you know, golf is so target and alignment oriented. What is like your pre-shot routine look like for you? What does that look like?
Yeah, I can't tell you exactly what it looks like. I don't know what it looks like, nice, but I can tell you what
Mike.
It feels God. Like.
Nice work, Mike, this idiot.
Is my, oh, God.
No, great question, For me, when I was fully sighted and playing in high school 5 days a week, I from inside 100 yards, I wouldn't even check the yardage. I would just look at it as a front, middle, back pin and then kind of decide what kind of shot I would play. But now, my dad is involved in the process. And so, golf is an individual sport. Blind golf is a team sport. And so my dad is my guide, caddy. He wears a lot of hats. But we'll kind of discuss what the hole is like, what club we want to hit. If it's off the tee, we'll kind of discuss that. And then, what he'll do is he'll point in the direction we want to hit the shot. I try to envision where he's pointing. Truly have no idea where he's pointing, but we do that just kind of to get a feel for it. And then I'll have done a practice swing already before that. And then I step into the shot and from behind, he lets me know if the club is on the toe or on the heel. And then he tells me if I need to go a little more right or left with my feet and I'll kind of turn around the ball right or left, depending on what he says. And then once he says it's good, I pull the trigger and hit the shot, and we do that the whole way around the course. And it sounds like it's a process, but I mean, when my dad and I play our home course together in San Diego, just the two of us, we get around in like 3 hours, 20 minutes. So we're not super slow by any means.
Stick and Hack Show, this is the best of. I'm not quite positive why this guy isn't all 10 of the top moments of 2020, but He is number two, Tom Meeks, who enjoyed a 30-year career with the USGA, on the show live, in studio, and in person with a studio guest. This was part of our Stick and Hack Challenge golf outing. What an incredible day this was. And Tom Meeks coming in and telling us these stories, including the story of when he kicked Tiger Woods off of a course. That's right. Tigray kicked off by Tom Meeks. Here's the story. It's Stick and Hack Highlight Best of number two of the Stick and Hack Show. You once kicked Tiger Woods off of a golf course. So my question is, exactly who do you think you are, Mr. Meeks?
Well, I did take a strong staff member with me, just in case we had a situation. But actually, Tiger has a funny practice routine on Wednesday. He will go out and play nine holes. And in this particular case, he jumped on the back nine. Well, in those days, we were only letting all the practice rounds go off one. And the primary reason was to let the maintenance staff get out there and do their thing.
Yeah.
Well, the maintenance staff now is on hole number 12, and here's Tiger on 10, and he's with Davis Love. Yeah. And I don't know how Davis got there, but the two of them, and I went out and I said, Tiger, I'm sorry, but you can't play back here. We got the maintenance crew. You can't hit into them because they're doing their thing.
Yeah.
And he hesitated a little bit, and then he agreed to do it. So we went in. It wasn't a kickoff. He agreed.
That's not what I heard.
All right. Well,
I heard you kicked him off the course, and there was a big to-do.
Here's the kicker, though. Immediately, the press wants me to come down to the press room and talk about this. And I said, no way.
I think that was a good choice.
Yeah. And then 33 years later, I'm talking about it.
Yeah. He's now having the conversation that they would have wanted to have with him at the time.
So that was 1997. So that was just kind of at the beginning of the rise of Tiger. And he has never changed his practice routine. He's never changed pretty much anything in 23 years. Would that be a different conversation today with you if you were in the same position? Or do you think it would still be the same thing? Well, you don't really care who it is, right? You have to do something.
That's right.
You're gonna take care of it, right?
Incidentally, Tiger and I are very good friends. So.
Oh, are you really?
Yes.
Yeah. No one's ever said that to me in my entire life.
Well,
I have never heard those words come out of anyone's mouth.
You don't run in Tiger's circle?
I don't run in Tiger's circle. Oh. This is the circle I run in. You.
Not much to talk about.
What a disaster. All right, it's a Stick and Hack program, and we are now down to number one of the best of this year. And it goes without saying that this guest is probably one of our most famous guests that we've ever had. He's Jim Davis, creator of Garfield. And he talked to us about what makes golf funny and the humor in golf, as well as many other things, on an incredible interview with Jim Davis, the creator of Garfield. Jim Davis is, in fact, number one best of highlight of the Stick and Hack Show. Enjoy. Stick and Hack member Jim Davis, creator of Garfield, who turns 42 years old and is the most iconic cartoon character of our generation, if not all generations. We are proud and honored to have Mr. Davis on the program and as a member of Stick and Hack. Jim, how are you?
That's fine. Good to see you, Adam. Good to see you, Mike.
Hello, Jim.
So, you know, this is a pretty cool moment for us. I know you probably get this a lot, and you're very sweet to take your time and be on the show. Golf is important to you. It's been a part of your life for many, many years, we're going to do our best to talk about golf, but it's very challenging to not just say thank you right off the bat for what you created and the cartoon that you probably don't even realize how it affected so many lives, so many kids still today, my kids included, know the name Garfield. And you created him 42 years ago, and to this day, he is still iconic. He is still mesmerizing. He is still funny. And the cast of characters that you created is probably one of the most beloved in all of comics. How does that resonate with you today, knowing what you have done with Garfield over these years?
I try not to think about it because the pressure would crush me if I thought about it every time, you know, I did a gag. I know what comics meant to me when I was growing up, and if it had half the effect on anybody else, I can understand that for sure, because, you know, I grew up with Peanuts and Beetle Bailey and Ian Lawis, DC, Wizard of It, And it meant a lot, because think about it. Every morning we have breakfast with those characters, day in, day out, for as long as 50 years. And I guess it's one thing in our life that shows us you can go back. There is something that you can count on, you know. Right. And it's positive, too. I know it rebalances the scales a little bit. Between, the very real, sometimes depressing things going on in the news, you know, we have the humor and give people a little slap.
Yep.
Do you find humor in golf?
Yeah, absolutely. I find humor in everything, but yeah, absolutely with golf.
What would you say in your golf life is one of those things where you look at it and every single time, like, every single time it's funny. Either maybe it's somebody falling down. Maybe it's somebody whiffing on their shot. Maybe it's somebody throwing a tantrum. What do you, Jim Davis, find hilarious about the game of golf?
I think it's the meltdown when somebody just bears their soul. Some person who's like very controlled, very professional, and they're locked in. You get out on a golf course and it all comes out. It's like, jumping and whirling and throwing the clubs and everything like that. Yeah. You never do in front of family or associates or anything like that. It's an honest moment. And I have to step away sometimes because I know they're in pain, but I'm behind a tree laughing. I bet it gets hysterical.
All right, there you have it. The top 10 moments of the Stick and Hack Show this year. There were about 4,000 moments we had to choose from because we're that awesome, but we whittled it down to 10. You're very welcome. We appreciate all the guests, all of the great content that they brought us and the great conversations, and we look forward to season 3 of the Stick and Hack Show in 2021. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of the Stick and Hack Nation. And if you are not a member yet, go to stickandhack.com and become a member of the world's greatest golf club without the course. It's free, free for life. It's our Christmas gift to you. Have a great holiday and a Merry Christmas. This is the Stick and Hack Show.